This is a production of Netcast Studio, online media for today's society. The new media broadcasting network dedicated to providing you content as it relates to your life. Whether it's technology, sports, educational, cultural, hobbies, or history, Netcast Studio has it all at netcaststudio.com.
The Tech of Sports 85 Tennis Roundtable with Marty Collins and Lisa Stone. Tonight on the Tech of Sports, the Tennis Roundtable. Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content for your smart devices. And you can go to the iOS or Android app and get the Netcast Studio app. And Tech of Sports, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. And the Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. Tonight, we're going to have our annual tennis roundtable here on the eve of the U.S. Open, and we're joined by one of my most frequent guests here, Marty Collins, lawyer, tennis parent, tennis enthusiast, Northern California. Marty, thanks for making time and coming on again.
Thanks for having me, Rick. I enjoy speaking with you whenever we get a chance.
Yeah, I consider you a good friend, Marty, and thanks for coming on. And another friend, Lisa Stone from the Parenting Aces tennis blog, and she's here in the Atlanta area with me. And Lisa, thanks for taking a few minutes out and coming on.
Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, thanks. I guess we'll start kind of with the event at hand. And anyone heading to the U.S. Open or wish they were heading there?
I'm heading up there first thing tomorrow morning, so I'm very, very excited.
Marty, you'll be watching.
I'm headed to my PC to cast the U.S. Open via Chromecast to my television.
Marty, you'll have the best seat out of anybody. I'm not going, but I'll be right with you. We'll have the best seat, and we won't have to spend $18 for a hot dog.
I do realize that, and I will try to take advantage of that, but still, I haven't been to the U.S. Open, and one day I will have to get there.
Or eat the media trough if people are brave enough to try that. So, Lisa, what are you going to do up there for a couple weeks?
I am actually going to be focusing on the Noah Rubin story and covering his attempt to win his first matches on the Pro Tour. And so it's going to be kind of fun. Noah, for those that don't know, won Junior Wimbledon this year. He just won Kalamazoo, our U.S. National Hard Court Championships in singles and doubles, which got him wild cards into the main draw of the U.S. Open singles and doubles. And his mom, Melanie, is a friend of mine and actually works as my assistant during the Open. And this year, for a little bit of a change, I'm staying with Melanie. So I'm really going to be following their story and you know, trying to figure out what it's like to be the parent to a kid who's living their dream right there.
Well, we wish him the best and hope for the best. But what if he's done after Tuesday, Lisa? What do you got? Plan the rest of the time then?
Well, I will definitely have interviews with some other tennis parents up there. I will also be talking to the college coaches that will be arriving once the junior U.S. Open starts, and really hope to kind of dig more into this new format for college tennis and get their input.
That's a discussion that'll go on forever and ever. Marty, what are you looking for this year as you'll be watching on your stream?
This year, I'll be watching for the American women and see how they stand up against the world in New York. Of course, we know they're going to get a lot of support. Of course, we know with the way tennis is presented today, they're going to be presenting a story. And one of those stories is going to be the emergence of more American women. So I'm hoping that the story plays out so that 2 weeks is entertaining. I've stopped making too many picks. I'll make picks. I don't have favorites anymore. I really do look for stories.
Marty, you're always good to make a pick or two, Marty. Come on.
Well, I don't have favorites. I'll make picks, but I've kind of lost the this idea that I have a favorite that I need to win the U.S. Open, or that I'm a big Roger Federer fan, but I don't need him to win the U.S. Open. I'm a huge Serena Williams fan, but I don't need her to win the U.S. Open for me to enjoy the Open. I really do enjoy the stories that develop, the underdogs, the upsets. Those are the best parts of 2 weeks of tennis to me.
And with all the TV coverage that the Open gets, they have time really to develop those stories and focus on them. Sometimes maybe a little too much, and it puts a little maybe a little too much pressure on some of those players, but it's all good. And I'm kind of right with you, Marty. I think there's a good chance of some, more than one, two, three, four American women maybe making it into the second week with the right draws. So I think that's definitely something to watch. And maybe a U.S. men's player can sneak into the second week somehow.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be awesome. I hope that that transpires. And I hope that it's one of the younger guys that do it, because I think it would have to be one of the younger males to stand up to the heat and the concrete in New York. Yeah.
But the men's draw may be a little more wide open this year than it has been in the past with Nadal out and
Djokovic. Sad.
Yeah, that is too bad. And probably Roger Federer is the happiest about that. But Andy Murray, maybe not 100%. Djokovic, not coming in on a winning streak. So there's some unknowns. Maybe, Lisa, maybe some different people in the round of 16 quarters semis this year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun to watch. I'm looking forward to seeing the last couple rounds of qualifying when I get up there tomorrow and, seeing some of these young guns kind of do their thing out there and see what they've got. It should be fun.
It's fun. And Lisa, maybe your opinion maybe on some of the player progress of some of the younger players that you'll be watching. How what have you noticed this summer or this year? And you think they've taken some good steps forward?
I do. I mean, I love some of the college guys that are out there competing and the college girls. Both genders are really holding their own out there. And I love, of course, given that my kid is headed on the college path, I love seeing these players coming out of their 4 years of college and making a splash out there. So I'm looking forward to seeing them, and it'll be fun to watch Marcos Giron, the NCAA champion, see how he does, and I'm a big fan of his, so hoping I'll get to see him play as well.
And Marty, you've watched a lot of tennis now over the years, and you're a tennis parent. You have a keen eye, I think, when you see a college player, what we consider a top college player from the U.S. going up against a wily veteran ATP Tour player. Can you see the difference in the games? Can you pick out the deficiencies of the college player and kind of see where they need to improve? And do you like watching that aspect of things?
I do like watching that aspect of things. And I've kept close watch on the college men trying to make the transition to the pros. And I'm going to talk more generally about it. I could name specific players. But essentially what you'll see with a college player that plays a seasoned ATP pro is the physicality of the pros versus the entering college player, as well as a little bit of body type things in terms of the ATP pro is bigger, but is still lean. And with college players, it's more offense, and they have to learn the defense at the ATP level to extend the points so that they can be offensive. There's a little impatience because each point they're going to get tired, and then it's about managing their ability to play tired and play well. So getting up to speed, and the person who's done a great job and it's reflected in the rankings, and a person that I didn't think had the ability to do it, Steve Johnson. Now he hasn't really done it insofar as I would consider top 40 having done it. And I did not envision that for him. But the strides that he's made have to be commended. He's gotten leaner. He plays defense now. So that combined with a big forehand and a nice service game means that he has an opportunity. We'll see where he goes from there.
Yeah, he's when I saw him a couple times this summer, he definitely has gotten leaner. And I think when he came out of college, Marty, he projected as a top 60, top 70 player. So for him to hit around 50 or in the top 40s, I think that's him overachieving a little bit. So
he's definitely been commendable from where he was a year ago, where he was facing a crossroads in terms of seeing what is required at the ATP level.
Yep, because he's a guy that put in the work in college, and it even goes up another notch once you hit the pros. And Lisa, when you watch the pros with your son, or you're watching the top players in the world, What are things that he notices or you point out to him that that the juniors don't do.
It's not me pointing it out to him. It's
the you. I'm sure you tell. You're not deferring to him on everything. I know that.
No, but I mean, one of the things that a coach actually pointed out to my son during a lesson, and I happened to be sitting there, is how much smaller the targets get from juniors to college to pros. And the area of the court in the juniors where you can hit a winner is pretty large, and that area shrinks significantly in college and then shrinks even more significantly on the pro circuit. So there are very few spots on the court that are clean winners in the professional game, and I think it's interesting to watch that.
Yeah, Marty, you'll appreciate this. I was at Green Bay Packer training camp all last week, and they put the little nets in the back corner of the end zone, and they have the quarterbacks throw in the fade route to see how many they can get in the nets.
Right.
And they have they had the rookie from Boston College going first, and he made, you know, one or two out of the six, and then Aaron Rodgers drops back and he puts five out of the six in the nets. So I mean, it just shows the
challenger level versus ATP.
Yeah, I mean, the same theory applies. I think there's no substitute for experience and for talent, of course, but
and precision. I mean, it's all about precision at that level.
And hard guys put in the miles and put in the reps, I think, and that's I think that's been maybe a number one problem for American players the last 5-7 years. They haven't worked it hard enough or put in the reps like a lot of the other players have.
And to that point, I'm sorry, Lisa, go right ahead.
I was going to say, I'm not sure that's the case. I think our players work plenty hard, and I just, you know, we just haven't had that breakout player recently. And I think everybody's looking to point fingers, but I still have faith that that person is coming.
On Lisa's point, I have faith that that player is coming, but not because it's cyclical or not because I say exactly why. And that's because we're finding out what's required other than reps on the court or swings on the court. We're getting the information about more the holistic body, especially on the men, where they're total men. They're built from the inside out to play almost to perfection. And that's what the American men are finding out. And that's where they start spending more of their time creating in themselves other than hitting the ball. And when that occurs, you'll start to see scores of American men that will compete at the same level.
Marty, you talk about body type. Is the day here where if you're not 6'3", or is the day coming in a couple of years, if you're not 6'3" or 6'4", you basically have no chance to be a good top 15 player?
No, I disagree with that. Okay. I actually do not believe. I think that, you know, that for some people, like 6'2", 6'3", is optimal. But the idea that the giant will take over the game, I don't agree. Milos Raonic is a great player. I don't see him winning a Grand Slam because I do think that you can get too tall, period. Because the 5'10 player, David Goffin, knows where to go on the 6'9 player. He's going to hit balls at that person's feet if they dare to move forward. There are tactics against the height. So I think that by the time they try to play seven matches, someone will get their number at the Grand Slam level. So I don't believe there's an optimal. I think there's an optimal fitness and mental concentration level combined with talent for tennis that makes the new ATP elite player.
Okay. And a lot of that is carried over.
Height does not matter as much as people may think.
If you're like LeBron James, I know that's an anomaly, but he's doing things at 6'9" that no one else in basketball has ever done. So I'm here.
I am here. That was about it. I don't think height is dispositive or whether he's too tall or, I mean, rather really small or really, like Noah Rubin is a great example. Noah Rubin is awesomely in shape, and for the height that he is, the build that he has, the internal makeup that he's created for himself is perfect for him. He's lean, he's mean, he's ultra fast. If he can capitalize on that, build other aspects of his game. His height won't be the reason why something does or does not occur for him at the AT level.
Lisa, let's touch on college tennis here quickly, and your summation, Cliff Notes version of what's going to happen in college this year. It's kind of a change from last year and previous years.
Yeah, the ITA just decided that for this upcoming year, there's going to be no ad scoring in singles and doubles. They are going to play doubles only one set to six instead of a pro set to eight. And they'll play a tiebreaker at 6-6 in the doubles matches. The singles matches will play no ad, and they'll play a full 2 out of 3 sets with tiebreakers at 6-6, just as normal. One of the biggest changes, besides the no ad, which I am not in favor of, is they're going to clinch, meaning that once 2 of the 3 doubles matches are won by a single team, they will not finish the third doubles match. And once a team has won 4 overall points in a dual match, the remaining singles matches will stop. They won't finish them out. And this, I think, is going to pose some real problems, both in the rankings and in player development. And, you know, I think it's a shame.
Marty, what's your quick opinion on that?
I don't have any opinion I have about it. I'm too far away from it to be able to analyze it, really. I mean, I hope my child is able to play tennis in college also, but I know that no ad, I know with no ad, I don't have as much an issue with no ad. I see that. I know that you can craft development in a no ad environment, but there are other aspects that Lisa brought up here that I know reduces people's opportunity to play. In other words, if you have 8 guys on a team and you're eliminating potentially a majority of the time that the doubles will get played out, that's a lot of tennis over a season that the team doesn't get to play. And it kind of, you know, it's creating more too many mascots on a tennis team, in my opinion.
Some were saying some
surface look,
playing too many matches already.
No, it's creating too many mascots on the team. Okay. In other words, if you have 8 guys, you're not going to change or reduce the number of people on the team. And then you have a situation where they're not playing out the doubles for a long time, where the data after 2 or 3 years shows doubles only get played X amount of time because, teams have locked it up by this. And then they come up with some other modification. You know, then there's some credence to the idea that they're trying to merge men and women's tennis. Or, you know, they're trying to create this integrated product. They're trying to get lean and mean with regard to athletic departments, number of teams, money, budget, all that stuff.
Yeah, well, the bottom line is tennis is a non-revenue sport, and whether a match lasts 3 hours or 5 hours isn't going to change that. So
It matters to TV, though, and it matters to now these conferences have these TV networks that they have airtime to fill. And they have guaranteed the ADs have told the NCAA and the investors that they're going to show every sport in some way, shape, or form on these channels. And they have to fit a 2-hour, 2.5-hour time block. And that's why tennis is going to fit in. And if you saw it today, Florida State just got picked up for multiple tennis matches for a Southern network. Yep.
Or ACC.
Yep, ACC, because they because of the new the new rules, it'll fit into the 2-2.5-hour block that they have.
They can have a TV format, and I think that's fine. And they can have a tournament format, and I think that's fine. But I think week in, week out, these dual matches need to play real tennis. And there's also a such thing as editing in television, you know? So
not if they're showing it live.
I don't know. I still, for the life of me, cannot figure out how they're going to show six matches happening at the same time.
They're going to show two.
Right. And what if they pick the two that aren't the ones that contribute to the team winning the match?
They'll have a mobile drop cam that they can move on to that court, I guess.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't buy it. I think this whole TV argument as a reason for this is bogus. And besides which, there is zero data showing how much the overall time is going to be impacted by switching to this new format. Nobody has been able to say we have data that proves we can keep these matches within that 2 to 3 hour window. So I'm not buying.
Lisa, I understand where you're coming from, and I understand the passion, but I also do understand that business of sports and the money side of this. And the one unfortunate thing is that we underestimate the ability of tennis to be integral to this new landscape, whether it's streaming or that the fact that these big five conferences are going to have television networks, and they actually want tennis on their network and filling the time rather than not wanting it.
Yeah, no, that's a great thing. And I'm all for that. I'm all for making tennis more accessible and more visible. I think that's fantastic. But when you've got tennis scored one way at the college level, another way at the world team tennis level, and yet another way on the professional tour, and who knows what the juniors are going to wind up doing. I mean, I just find, you know, it's going to be very confusing to the fans. I don't know, you know, are we really going to draw additional fans this way, or are we just going to aggravate the old school fans who want to see tennis the way it's supposed to be played? One of the things that gets neglected in this whole discussion is the fact that when no ad scoring was being used back in the 70s and 80s, there weren't these limits on the number of hours that players could practice and the number of matches the players could play. It was a very different landscape back then. So, you know, there are a lot of different rules in place now that are going to, I think, make the no ad scoring not be what our organizers, our ITA people are looking for. And it's, to me, it's disappointing. But, you know, who am I? I'm just a mom. And just want my kid to have an opportunity to play at the collegiate level. And so if this is what it's going to take for college tennis to be around for five more years until he graduates, then I guess we suck it up and deal with it. And I hope it's around for your kid, Marty.
And if it's what it takes for it to be around as it's been around in the past, I'm willing to walk into the future with this also. And try to make things better if that's what's required too.
Well, here's my question though. If this is truly a revenue issue for the NCAA or for tennis in particular, why not spend the effort raising money? I mean, tennis is notorious, and I'm using the word notorious as a good thing, for producing some pretty high-level college graduates in the professional world, not tennis specifically, but, you know, in business and in the professions. And why not go after the alumni networks and really press them to support their alma maters and support the tennis programs there? You know, if tennis were self-supporting, maybe we wouldn't need to keep messing around with the format and the scoring. Just a thought.
So would you say, that doesn't create an opt out of the future, which is the fact that the college sports are going to be on television, that at some level they're going to make them all concede to television frameworks.
I haven't talked about football, baseball, basketball, track and field, any of that being changed. Have you?
Yeah, they have.
They were changed.
They talked for years about time and football and baseball.
They were changed to fit the time frames. Now that we know college football 3 hours, college basketball 2 hours, you know, what else did you mention there? College baseball. Well, baseball, they don't get any TV coverage other than that baseball is different, whole different animal. But yeah, they have to fit these things to a certain time frame. And tennis and even some of the coaches, you know, they say, They'll say under their breath they went on for too long, and so I mean they're trying to do something. I applaud them for trying to do something. We'll see after a year what people think of it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to follow for sure.
Yeah, I kind of like the idea of watching some college tennis on television. Teams you normally wouldn't see play until the NCAAs. I think that's a good thing. And these conference networks, as Marty knows, are going to drive a ton of money. So They're going to control sports now. That's with the new NCAA rules. These conferences will make their own rules, and the TV networks will run these conferences. So that's everybody's going to have to bow down to these conferences.
Well, the good news is that the ITA did leave a loophole that if both coaches for a dual match agree on playing the old format, they can do that. And
wow,
so
that's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. And so I suspect we'll see
unless it's a TV match.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I suspect we'll see some of that on the non-televised matches.
Let's touch on junior tennis here before we take a break and then wrap up. Junior tennis, Lisa, you saw some this summer. Mess or progress?
Total mess in terms of the selection process for our national tournaments. And I am really hopeful that USTA is going to go back to the table and fix this quickly, because the way that the selection process happened for national clays and national hard courts was just disastrous. Not only did parents and junior coaches have no clue about what they needed to do for their child to be eligible to play, but then we saw the wild card process again happen behind closed doors, very foggy in terms of, you know, how decisions were made, even though we were promised that it was going to be transparent moving forward. And so, I mean, you know, we mentioned Noah Rubin earlier in the show. Noah had to get a wild card into Kalamazoo, and he ended up winning. I mean, he got into the qualies, but he would have had to go through qualies, win three matches at the qualifying level before getting to the main draw. Instead, USTA awarded him a wild card directly into the main draw, which, thank God, because for those kids that were going up to qualies, can you imagine drawing Noah Rubin first round? That would be awful. So, and the other thing that happened with qualies, and the qualies just were in the 16s and 18s, so I should point that out, but the other negative thing that came out with the qualies is in previous years with the larger draw sizes, if you lost in the first or second round of the tournament, you fed into the back draw and you continue to play. Well, the way the qualies worked is if once you lost in qualies, that was it. You were out. So there was no opportunity to continue on in any sort of consolation bracket. And some of the college coaches did come up for the qualies, but certainly not the numbers of coaches that were there for the main draw. So, you know, it was, I think, a big loss for a lot of these kids.
I thought that this new format was supposed to save on travel costs or get more bang for your buck, Lisa. You're saying it didn't, and you also were saying that there was something about junior tennis wasn't transparent. That's just shocking to me.
Well, what's interesting is if you were selected into the qualifying draw for either clays or hard courts, you had an automatic entry into the doubles, the main draw doubles, which on the surface is great, right? Because you think, well, even if I don't get through qualies, at least I'll get to play doubles in the main draw.
You got to stay around another week, though.
Exactly. The kicker was that at clay courts, there was a dead day in between the end of qualies and the start of doubles. And so that was an extra day at the hotel, extra day of meals, all of that, extra day of practice courts and you know, all of that stuff. So it didn't work out quite as USTA had planned, even though there were several folks sort of giving them a heads up that what happened this summer was exactly what was going to happen this summer. So if they act surprised, that's too bad, because they certainly had a heads up. And again, again, my hope is that they'll go back to the drawing board and fix this quickly before next year.
So you see what you have to look forward to, Marty?
Well, of course, me and Lisa, on this point, me and Lisa have diverging views. I tend to be in favor of the national changes, even though I'm on the other, as far as helping a kid, I'm on the other end of the spectrum insofar as they're just, my kid's 12 years old. But I have delved into the changes. I kind of understand what occurred. My thinking on it after this amount of time is that the changes work for the sections that change their calendars to most conform to the national calendar. So the 17 sections, the two that I understand did the most to have their sections conform to the national calendar are Eastern and Northern California. I can confirm that Northern California's calendar from the 12th to the 18th conforms with the national calendar. And that now I do concede that you can't get into the weeds with where to play, how to qualify, what's the best tournaments. Especially here, there are a lot of offerings, there are a lot of levels. But that information does exist, and it does seem to work when the section's calendar conforms with the national calendar. It gives you an opportunity to assess where your child is and properly place them in tournaments that will allow them to matriculate and give them experience like that 2-3 win ratio. You know, if you do it right, you can make it work with the Wayne Bryan principles. And if they working hard, they have an opportunity to play enough, they can qualify up the chain of events.
What I thought was interesting was I talked to Mark Riley, who's the tournament director for Kalamazoo. I had spoken with him. It was either in March or April that I reached out to him because I went online to read the Kalamazoo tournament website to figure out exactly how they were selecting for that tournament, for the qualifier and for the main draw. And none of that information was available on the website. When I spoke to Mark, he expressed his frustration that USTA still hadn't fed him the information to upload to the website. So as late as March or April, and the tournament started the end of July, there was still some confusion about how players were going to be selected for the qualifier and the main draw. And that to me is problematic. That doesn't allow a family a whole lot of time to make adjustments to ensure that their child is playing the right events in order to qualify. And I think that's a problem.
Let me just take a quick break here as we have one more question as we wrap up. But Lisa may be interested to know this, that September 30th is actually National Podcast Day. And whether you're a podcaster or listener, there is something we all can do to help promote podcasting and the growing platform of podcasting. September 1st, nationalpodcastday.com will debut, and it will be available to help promote podcasting, education, and social engagement. It all starts September 1st, leading up to National Podcast Day on September 30th. So that's pretty important to the people that do internet and broadcasts that turn into podcasts. So as we wrap up here, guys, just Marty, give a quick quick answer to what do you have going on here the rest of the year, and what are you looking for the rest of the year?
Oh, that's a great question. My son and I are headed you guys' way.
Great.
We are going to be in South Carolina near Columbia in mid-October for the National Junior Tennis Team Championships. So
That's a fun event.
Oh, really? Good. Good, 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 good.
Well, and, in the South, everyone's going to treat you well in the South, Marty. Southern hospitality.
Excellent. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to it. It'll be one of my, well, I was born in Missouri and I visited regularly, but I've never been that far down south before, and I look forward to it. Or that far east in our country. Oh, yeah, I've been in New York.
It's a beautiful area. You'll have a blast. And it won't be so hot then, so that's
cool. Oh, excellent.
It could be hot still, though.
Yeah, but not like 100-degree hot.
No. Let's hope not. Lisa, you're going to the U.S. Open for 2 weeks, and then what's on your docket after that?
Well, we're in the midst of college recruiting, so
Lisa, this has been going on for like 5 years now. Come on.
No, my son's a senior this year, so this is it. This is his graduating year. Crazy school calendar that we have in Cobb County, Atlanta suburb. My son has a week off school in September for fall break. I don't know. It's kind of weird. So we're trying to figure out what to do with that time and maximize the ability to travel a little bit without having to miss any school. So it's all going to be kid related, I'm afraid, for these next few months. And I'll be documenting it all on Parenting Aces. So
yep, just school first. That's what I always
absolutely
tell people. Marty, you got a pretty good school there. You might want to tell Lisa up near you. I think the sports teams are nicknamed the Bears. Is that a pretty good school up there?
It is a pretty good school. Nice campus. Yes, it is.
See, I'm a Bruin, so I don't know.
That's why I had to say that.
I know.
Well,
good schools all over the country.
On that point, we could dive into choosing colleges. We've got some other great Division I and Division II schools here that have great weather and are building programs. And I'll just say, go Poly.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, wow. That is a good one.
Yeah.
That is a good growing program there. Yeah. Anything else you want to promote, Lisa?
No, how can
listeners get in touch with you or follow your blog?
They can find me at parentingaces.com or on Twitter. I'm Parenting Aces there. Parenting Aces on Facebook. Parenting Aces on Instagram. And I'm all over all the social media. And I hope they'll tune into my podcast. They air live on Mondays at noon Eastern. And the links are on all the different social media outlets. So hopefully people will tune in. I'll be broadcasting live from the Open these next two Mondays and looking very forward to it.
And Marty, you always have an opinion and you're always trying to promote something through Twitter. How can people follow you if they want to see what you're up to or if they need a good lawyer? How can they get in touch with you?
Please follow me on Twitter, Martennis, MARTENNIS, Martennis. That's where I do my thing. I have other outlets. I do a lot of stuff on Google Plus because I have Google Glass and I really like how they treat me and how they treat my photos and it makes things beautiful and I like it a lot.
Excellent. Thanks. Thanks for coming on, guys. And always good to have you guys on at least once a year. And it feels better, doesn't it? You get that off your chest, Lisa and Marty, and you kind of now can go about your week.
Exactly.
I think, you know what? You are right. You are absolutely right.
Thanks for dumping ground, Rick.
Yeah, Marty, you're going to go about your week anyway. I mean, whether you talk to me or not. So
correct.
Thanks for coming on, guys. Just want to let all the listeners know Netcast Studio has many other shows they can check out at netcaststudio.com and the Two Thumbs Up podcast directory, where Lisa should have her podcast listed in this free directory. It's twothumbsupmedia.com. So check that out. That's set up by the people here at Netcast Studio. So you've been listening to The Tech of Sports on Netcast Studio Production.